Thank you, Owen. I'm Marilyn H. from Hidden Brook, and I'm happy to see everyone here, and I wish I could have the popcorn with you. I had wanted to join everybody, but given the problems with COVID and everything else going on in the world and my physical world, I felt that it was more prudent for me to Zoom from home. So I am. I'm in my office, which is where I've held my probably 1,000 Zoom meetings that I've gone to since the pandemic started. And no, I haven't moved the books around and I haven't moved the stuff around in my shelves because I don't give a damn. And that's part of my program is figuring out what's important. So what I wanted to spend my time with you tonight on is what my focus is now, as opposed to January 12th, 2002, which was my first official Al-Anon meeting, and it has changed. I am definitely in a much more comfortable space. I am completely aware of who I am now and what I am going through and what I have gone through, and putting things into perspective so that they reflect the passage of my life over 20 years in this program and how I have learned to accept the principles of this program and become a part of it so that I'm comfortable with who you are in relationship to me and who I am in relationship to you. And I always like to start out with the Serenity Prayer. And if you will join me for just this 1 second and say it again, I'd appreciate that. God. Thank you. Thanks, everyone, and thank you, Higher Power, for guiding me through this. Before I go too far, I do want to tell you a couple of the things. First of all, a lot of you know me. And you've heard my story before. This is actually my 4th speaker meeting that I have done. And they seem to fall in 3 to 4 or 5 year increments. I thought to myself not that long ago, gee, I'd like to do one more speaker meeting. I wonder if that's ever going to be possible. And son of a gun, or literally one of my sponsees, at a meeting that is at the meeting that is hosting tonight's meeting, suggested that I be the speaker for this particular meeting. It blew me away. She did not clear it with me before, but she talked to some of her sister sponsees and they agreed that it would be okay for me to do it. And so thank you. I appreciate the support and the love that I get from you. Since you might know my story, and if you don't, I'm only going to briefly go over it because that story started so many years ago that it's almost ancient history. And I like to talk about current history, not necessarily what the world is going through today, but my history. And my history took a complete turn for the better in 2002. I had no intention of coming to a meeting, nor did I have any intention of ever staying or coming back to another meeting. But here I am 20 years later, plus doing it and loving it. It is a wonderful program. I want to read a couple of things to you just to get started, because reading literature has been a huge part of my recovery. This is not Al-Anon literature, I have to say. But what it is a written piece that was on a blackboard in the home meeting that I was attending toward the very beginning of coming to Al-Anon. And it was on a whiteboard, on a sheet, on a standard in the room where we were holding the meeting. And I read it and I realized after coming to several months of meetings that this was exactly what I was getting every time I came to an Al-Anon meeting. And it is, thank you, God, for stories, stories of problems and mistakes, stories of love and forgiveness, stories of your care and concern for people in trouble, stories that help us learn about you and your love. Amen. And that was an Al-Anon, but it sure was Al-Anon to me. And I wrote it in the back of my One Day at a Time. And I've never neglected reading it every once in a while to remind me that your stories are so important and that we all together have collective stories that are similar, but they're also the kind of stories that we get to share with one another who are suffering, having trouble, needing help, in need of a higher power, in need of friends, in need of being able to tell secrets, in need of just connecting with other people who understand in a safe place. And that is exactly what Al-Anon is. It is my safe place. It has allowed me to be safe with other people and to also be safe with you, even if I don't know you, even if I just met you 15 minutes ago. You are bound by the statement in the beginning that what stays in this room stays in this room. And we are so lucky to have that because our secrets are only as good as we can face them and work with them together with friends. So that's that one. The other one is to remind you, and I hope you were listening to the adult children statement. That is so important to me. I did not grow up in an adult, an alcoholic family, but I have said this before, and many of you have heard it. I did raise two children who were, and I am forever sorry that they had to go through some of the things that they did. Not all of them, because they had a pretty great childhood in many ways, but in other ways, what they had were unhappy parents who had struggles and difficulties because I was so upset with their father's drinking. And he's the other part of the story, but you know what? He's not here tonight and I'm not bringing, I didn't invite him. So I do feel that adult children have the problems that they grow up with. And I hope that all adult children of alcoholics can find this program so that they themselves can find the peace that I have found as an adult parent of them. You know, it says in there's one line, control has meant survival for the adult child. Well, you know, control means survival for just about everybody. But what I've learned and what I've had to recognize is that I'm not in control. And that is one of the concepts of the program, is that I have to be able to let go. I have to be able to take those steps and let go of control. I have to learn how to accept. I have to learn how to appreciate and love. I had a conversation a couple days ago with somebody that's very dear but new in my life, but who is an Al-Anon member. And she said, let's distill it down to, because I was talking about sharing. She said, let's distill it down to really what the program can help us with as we come into it and we stay here. And that is being able to hold on to, I love you, thank you, I forgive you. Please forgive me. These are so elemental, but we lose sight of them. We don't hold on to them. We don't even know that they exist when we're in the midst of all of our strife and our sadness and inability to get along with other people. I'm also going to mention that I do have a weakened voice. Those of you that know my other voice know that I don't sound like me, but I am me. I am dealing with 5 years as of last week of ovarian cancer. I am what I consider a survivor because the outlook is not great for this cancer. I've gone through chemo. I'm currently going through chemo again. I am able to function emotionally and mentally better than I am physically. So the voice lack is part of it, but listen to the old me. You got me here. Also want to start by saying that in the beginning, and I'm going to do this very briefly. In the beginning, these were the things that were so important to me about the program that I didn't yet grasp, but I have. And that is service at the group level. That's the third legacy. And that my first service position was literature. It made all the difference in the world to me. I have a huge library of all of the Al-Anon books that our conference approved. I've read them all. And while I don't agree with everything, I do recommend that everybody read and do the workbooks, do the steps. The steps are so critical. In the beginning, I hated things like the do's and don'ts. That was about as bad as the slogans. I just couldn't grasp it. It was like, why can't I follow the alcoholic around and see what he's doing? Well, that was not going to help anybody, was it? Especially if he didn't even know I was outside the building that he was in, sitting in my car, spewing hatred. I didn't have a higher power. I have to say my higher power is very amorphous and didn't come around when I wanted him to. Took his or her time, its time, their time, my time to manifest. But when, and I say he just because that's the old way of doing it. I say he because I'm in many ways old-fashioned. I was raised in a religion that I no longer believed in after the death of my dad when I was 13. But some patterns are slow to leave, and so he is the word that I use, but it's much more amorphous than that, and how I believe I have a higher power that surrounds me with love and comfort all of the time. The slogans, well, took me a while to appreciate them. Took a while for a GR that I actually didn't get along with at one meeting to make these little sheets with each of the slogans on them and put them on the floor around the room where our chairs were when we were having our meetings. And I had to finally figure out. Some of them were pretty valuable. And the ones I've come down to are, how important is it? Boy, that was a huge one. And I have used that with my sponsees, and I've used it with a number of other people. When they come and complain and can't do anything and they have no control over an issue, how important is it? And then one day at a time, because that's all we have. We're not promised anything else. It's just a one day at a time life. And Al-Anon is a one day at a time program. And then the other one that continues to hold me in its arms is let go and let God. Because if I don't do that, I'm trying to control I'm trying to hold on. I'm not able to accept. And I make myself crazy. And you don't want the crazy me to come back. You want this me to be more present and more in line with Al-Anon thinking. And doing the steps, and right now I'm going up to about my 10th year in Al-Anon. And doing the steps, I had a wonderful sponsor who shared with me, take your time. Don't try to finish them. Really be thorough. Really understand what these steps are all about. Pay attention to 1, 2, and 3, especially surrender. That was hard for a person who loves control and has so much angst about letting other people take on care, concern, even helping me. It's hard. It's really, really hard. But that's where I have to let go and let God and surrender to all that can happen for me and with me. And it is with me. It's never an alone situation. I have the strength of the groups behind me. I have the meetings I've gone to. I have the meetings I continue to go to. I have the talks that I have with Al-Anon people. I have a fabulous sponsor these days who I've known from the very beginning of my coming into the program, but it took me years to ask her to be my sponsor. When I was talking to her this morning, I said, what took me so long? She said, you did it when the time was right. And that's the kind of answer you get in Al-Anon. You do these things when the time is right. And sponsoring people, that also is clearly a most important issue. That is sometimes when I am sponsoring one of my sponsees and we're working a step or we're reading their writing, I get to say, oh my gosh, I am doing this step with you. I am clearly line by line, question by question, and I do use paths to recovery. I am doing this step with you. I get to do it again. So by now, with the number of sponsees I've had over the years and currently do have, I've probably done the steps 60 or 70 times. Maybe not all of them, not sequentially, but my goodness, how much I have gained from doing steps with sponsees and doing them with my sponsors. When you get to the seventh tradition, that is the one about being fully self-supporting. So I spent years being so self-supporting that I pushed other people away from help. And that's not being self-supporting. Self-supporting is asking for help when I need it. And I finally learned during this particular bout with my cancer that being self-supporting means get what you need from who you need it from. You don't have to do it all yourself. I am financially able, thankfully, but I'm not medically, family-wise, or even, I hate to say it, making my own meals, capable right now of doing that. And so I have to ask for help. I can't just assume that somebody else knows what I need. And, you know, the seventh tradition is my favorite tradition because I can see things in correct perspective. The next one is seeing my part and doing step 9. It took me a long time to get to being able to see my part in a situation. And when I did my 9th step, I had a list. In the beginning, I thought, well, I'm not going to have very much of a list. Boy, did I have a list. And doing that 9th step with so many of the people that I had harmed or I had perceived that I had harmed was cleansing. And it was so refreshing to acknowledge that I had a part in everything that our traditions teach us, that we are not alone. The traditions are dealing with other people. And how we deal with other people is a mark of our success in the program. acknowledging that we have a part, and making living amends. Sometimes it's really, really hard to make a living amends, but I try to do it as frequently as I can. And making a verbal amends or written amends if necessary, because I've had to write some pretty huge written amends to people who have passed away that I had harmed. And they included my parents. They included some friends that have moved far away that I have no longer that I'm no longer in contact with. But I've tried as well as I could to make those living amends so that I don't make those mistakes again. And seeing my part and doing step 9 and connecting that with acceptance, those are tied together. That I have to accept that I'm a flawed human. I'm never going to be perfect. I never was, even though I thought I was early on. Before that first meeting, I was sure I was perfect. I can assure you I was not, and I still am not, but I'm a work in progress. And that's why we say progress is not perfection. I will tell you that these are my favorites of each of the pieces of the program. For the steps, the 10th step. Every day is a 10th step day. At the end of the day, I have to think about what I've done that I'm okay with, and what I've done that I am not okay with. And I have to rectify the not okay part as soon as I can the next day, or as soon as I recognize that I have that opportunity to do that. The 7th tradition, as I said, and the 4th steps, the traditions, and this is a brain fart right now. You are watching my brain fart in action. Steps, traditions. Someone help me, please. Help me, please.
Concepts.
Concepts, Marilyn.
No, the fourth. Participation is the key.
Promises.
You're all participating. Concept. Thank you for the prompt. and then lastly, the 3rd legacy about service, and I'll tell a little more about service in a minute. So that takes us up to about 2011. And that's a lot of hard work and a lot of time spent with sponsors and meetings, doing service. But what happened in 2011 was that my eldest daughter was diagnosed with breast cancer. And until you have a close, beloved family member with a chronic or deadly disease, there are issues that you cannot necessarily resolve in any easy way. But if I had not had this program at that point in my life, I don't know that I would have survived in order to be able to be there for her in such a big, loving, open-hearted way. She had a 2-year-old. I had just moved my work from working in San Francisco on a daily basis, which made me insane, to working out of my home. So I had a new, in the same industry, a new way of working that made it so much easier for me to work from home and to be a part of her recovery. And it was brutal. It was a brutal, brutal time. And at one point, and I will say that because I'd had such an acrimonious divorce, oh yes, we did divorce, and I think it was final in 2005. I was able to sit in the waiting room during her first surgery. And I sat next to my ex-husband, who was a man that I had lived with for 37 years before separating and divorcing. And we looked at each other while she was undergoing this surgery. And we both said at the same time, the same words, "I'd take a bullet if this could be me instead of her." And that changed so much of what I was feeling. Did it make me forgive? No. Did it make me forget? No. But what it made me realize was that, once again, not alone, not alone. I had support. I had somebody else that felt the same way. We loved our children incredibly dearly. They were the most important things in our marriage that came out of it. The fact, success in business, travel, running from one fun thing to another, skiing, doing all those things that we did as a family and also as a couple, those were not important. What was important was what we would do for somebody else. And I learned that from Al-Anon. Could I have done that before? Of course I could have, but it wouldn't have been within the same spirit, and it wouldn't have been with the same heart of love and sharing that love with other people, because we had another child. They had children. They had spouses. They had families. We were all in this together. This was not an alone life. You know, cancer isn't fun. But I'll tell you what's less fun. And that is working with idiots. The people that I had worked with before I left the city were in large part addicted to alcohol or some drugs or just insanity. And my frustration at dealing with them for 8 years while commuting for sometimes 2.5 hours each way from here in Hidden Brook to San Francisco would make my innards churn. But what I found was that the longer I was in the program and the ability to think about program stuff while I was driving actually made it easier for me. And then how I used the slogans once I was there, and more than once I made a little sign for each of the employees that I had unfortunately inherited that I couldn't get rid of, and there were 12 of them. And I was, here's something weird. I ended up being a manager. Just when I'm trying to give up everything, I'm a manager of a business. But what I ended up having to do was to make these little signs that I would put in their areas where they worked and say, how important is it? Because everything was drama. Everything was hard to deal with. Everybody was a bastard, and they just wouldn't listen to me. So finally, when I was able to leave, and when I did change to working from my home, I was able to give that all up and to walk away from these people who were giving me no peace. No peace. So that leads me to, who do you want to have around you? Who do you want to have around you? So these are some principles that I feel are pretty important. Family and friends, don't waste love on the wrong people. Who do you want in your front row? And I have said this to my sponsees many, many times. I had in-laws who always would buy theater seats, front row center, and they would spend the extra bucks for it. And actually, I too love theater that way. And going as close to the front of the stage where the actors can be there, and as they're saying their lines, their spit is hitting you. It's like, that's who I want in my front row. And I want people to be in my front row that are there with me and for me. And in those cases, they are now so many Al-Anon people. And there are some people here that I have invited who are from my divorce and separation workshop, because that was years ago, but they're from my cancer support community. And they're from other issues that I'm able to be connected to, including family. And these are people I want in my front row. And I love inviting them. I love asking them to be in my front row. I love to see them. I love to see your faces when I see you on Zoom. Speaking of Zoom, that takes me up to our couple 3 years ago. You know, I have to say, as sorry as I am about the pandemic, and as difficult as it has been for so many millions of people, both those who lived through it and those who have died, without Zoom, these last 2.5 years would have been incredibly difficult. I have gained so much from my Al-Anon Zoom meetings. When we went strictly to virtual meetings, I found it to be expanding and opening. It allows us to be honest with one another without having to get in the car and pay a toll on the bridge. I don't have to drive at night. And speaking of driving at night, one great thing that has happened just recently is that I had to stop driving at night about a year ago because my vision was so bad, especially with oncoming lights. And so three months ago, I had cataract surgery. And the idea of somebody cutting my eye open scared the shit out of me. But I gotta tell you, it's one of the best things I ever did. And even though I'm still wearing glasses, those of you who have known me for all my adult life know that I love groovy glasses. So when I went in to get a new prescription, I said, I still wanna wear glasses all the time. And the last time I traveled, a big trip, was to London with my daughter, Bevan, and we visited her daughter, Emma, who was a student in London then and is now going back in a couple of weeks to start her college, to finish her college career. And I'm very proud of her, three years to completion. She did everything in 3 years and ended up with just about a 4 point. So could I be any more proud of somebody like that? No. Bevan and I were walking the streets of London, and that's when I had the capacity to walk 5 to 7 miles a day. And we went to 2 glasses stores and I bought 4 pairs of glasses. So I am future thinking. I want you to know that I'm not giving up. I've got 4 pairs of glasses with new prescriptions that I intend to wear regularly. And they all, when they all went to be filled, I asked my higher power to give me a great prescription. And with the help of my higher power and a great optometrist, I've got a great prescription. So this is 1 pair. These might be the favorite pair. But you know, when you have glasses on, you can see clearly. And I will tell you that even though I haven't been able to test it out at night, what I can see with this cataract surgery is such clarity outside. Color is brilliant. Details, I'm seeing leaves that I can see the veins from outside my office window. I can see the sunlight golden on the hill across. I have beautiful views here. And I will tell you also that having a garden that was mine from the very beginning, when I built my house, there was nothing here. There was nothing here. And if you want, later on, I'll tell you the building of the house Serenity Prayer story, but I've said it every time I've spoken. My house is built on the Serenity Prayer, and there is no place else I would rather be. No place. I don't believe in heaven. I don't believe in hell. I don't have a clue what's going to happen when I close my eyes and take my last breath. But I do know that here is where I love to be, and here is where I'd like to stay for as long as possible. And if I have to be here, so be it. It works fine for me. I wanted to talk about service at the district and higher levels. Doing service is so critical in this program. We need to give of ourselves. I was active in every service level, in every meeting I have attended, including, no, I was not. I never did coffee, just because I'm not a great coffee maker. So that one seemed to be a little bit less critical than anything else. But all the other ones were really important. And when I was the GR, first for one and then another group, I realized that I loved doing service for my group. I loved being the conduit of information, bringing things back to the group that the district had been working on and making happen. Together with the district, we created the speaker meeting, one day in Al-Anon, our picnics. We had any number of different things that came about from district level. And eventually I was one of the officers of the corporation, because we became incorporated in 2005. I was one of the officers, and I stayed on and my first service position at district level was to be the treasurer. And thank goodness, and that person on my screen right now is right next to me. If she hadn't been there to help me be the treasurer, I probably would have thrown my computer out the window, because she was there every step of the way. And I'm still crazy bad at Excel spreadsheets, but now I can run, I can do what I need to do. And I did two terms as treasurer, because by the time I got to the second one, I thought, I can do this. It has given me patience and experience in the service position to do it. And then I was the alternate DR, and then I became the DR, and that opened the door to doing service at the Northern California level, which was incredibly rewarding. I cannot encourage those of you who are new in the program, or even if you've been in the program for a while, to do service. Do it for yourself. Do it for your community. Do it because it's such a good thing to do, to strengthen Al-Anon in your own mind, and to accept how to do things differently and to work with groups. That's the traditions together. They are so important. And also when I work with my sponsees, I will tell you, we never just stop. We do not stop at the steps. We go on to the traditions, and then we go on to the concepts. We go further. It's important to look at the entire program and to embrace it and to use it. So, and I actually, at the Northern California level, I was also part of the executive committee, and that actually works together with other DRs, and it creates harmony big harmony between the officers of Northern California and all of the other levels of working together in Al-Anon. Going back to Zoom, I made this note for myself. This is my whole talk right here, one page, and I'm kind of following it down. I'm pretty extemporaneous. That's why you hear so many ums and ah, because I'm thinking about what I'm going to say next to you. But what I really want to tell you, is a comment that came from one of the writing classes I've been taking this year and last year and the year before. What has become available, interestingly enough, through a couple of different routes is online writing classes. And even though my industry and my history is in the art material industry, and I majored in art in college, and I taught a strange thing, but for 32 years I taught life drawing, which was basically drawing naked people to adult artists. What I learned from teaching is how much you learn from your students. And I thought, I need to do something that I have always pushed down, and that is write. I write a lot on Facebook. I had a blog for a while, but what I'm realizing is that I have so much inside of me to write. And one person who I appreciate, I've taken a couple of years of group classes with, and they're very small classes, there's only a few of us in it, is to be able to tell you a story, be able to tell you something that I'm thinking about or has changed me or has given me growth. And I've written a lot about Al-Anon, but I've also written about the other things in my life that have influenced me, including many of the people. And one of the things that this instructor does, who is a good 20 years younger than I am, says, you know, and she reads a poem sometimes and says, okay, now write for 10 or 12 minutes on it. And if that doesn't work, use this. What I really want to tell you. And I have found in my writing and in working with my sponsees when I ask them to write things, is to ask them to do that same thing. Because mostly people are writing about themselves and they're writing about what they're going through. And sometimes you don't want to tell people what you want them to know. You just want them to get it from the ether. And that's not possible. What I really want to tell you is something that is affecting me right now that I'm thinking about, that maybe I heard a prompt or a word or just a line about something completely obscure, but it takes me to, oh, I want to write about this. And so I will, what I really want to tell you is that I have about 70 pieces that I want to write about. I don't know if I'll get them written. I don't know if I'll write 1, 2, 10, 20, any, but I know I want to tell you about them and I want to share them. And is it going to lead to an Amazon book that I published? Nah, but I want my grandchildren to know. I want my dear friends to know. I want people to understand that inside the mechanism of each person is something that has to come out. But I also know, and I want to tell you this, is that if I hadn't had Al-Anon to guide me, I wouldn't be able to let you know what these things are, wouldn't be able to let go of those horrible secrets that I kept for so many years about living with an alcoholic. And you know, I haven't lived with an alcoholic now for 20 years. That's a long time. It's a long time. Even though we had lived together for so many years before, I have to take into consideration that those 30 some odd years prior don't go away. So I want to talk about forgiveness. I took a divorce and separation workshop about a year into my coming into Al-Anon, and it was actually offered by the Catholic Church, and I'm not. But it was out in Pleasanton, and I would drive from San Francisco to Pleasanton. And I did this for 2 years, every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. And there were a couple of things that I have as my takeaway. One is, and you know, this seems strange, but the priest who ran this was also a psychiatrist. And I don't know how somebody who's Catholic, who's not been married, can understand marriage as well as he did, but he did. And one of the exercises he had us do, and I will have to admit, there were 50 people in this group. All of us going through divorces or separations, most of whom were Catholic. And that was an anomaly. I would not have expected that. And I thought, well, here I'm going to be one of the oldest people there that's been married the longest. There was someone there that was 20 years more than me leaving a marriage. But this one thing that he had us do, and there I'm just going to highlight on two. The first one was to take a snapshot, a mental snapshot of your favorite wedding picture, and have it in front of you in your mind's eye, in your neurolinguistic eye, and you see that picture, and you look at it, and you really, really, really look at it. And he had us all standing in a circle, shoulder to shoulder, pre-COVID. Said, close your eyes, look at that picture. You're happy, smiling. Is it a moment that you would remember forever? And he said, now I want you to caption it. And that is, rest in peace. Because what he meant was that when you make that commitment to a marriage, and you say, till death do us part, there's a third entity there. And that is, if the marriage dies, you do not have to stay in it any longer. That made a huge difference to me. And I remember coming back to my Al-Anon meeting the next time and saying, I just had a revelation that was so startling. I couldn't believe how powerful and how important that was to me to be able to let go. Let go. The other thing that happened at a different meeting was we were talking about forgiveness. And you know, I hope, if you've been to Al-Anon meetings before, that forgiveness is a big topic that a lot of us want to talk about and don't know how to get to. And he said something that also really made me carry it into all of my Al-Anon years. And that is, forgiveness is a gift you give to someone who doesn't necessarily deserve it. There are little components to that. Who do we forgive for what? And do we have to give it to them? Because the bottom line is, forgiveness is a gift you give to yourself. And that, you know, that's the other part of Al-Anon that I love, is that I constantly am able to gift myself with what I need, I'm given it from other people, but I'm also able to say, I can forgive this person. I don't need to carry this around for the rest of my life. It doesn't mean, it just added weight. Now, I need to gain weight. I am thinner than I have been since I was about 6 months old right now. And so I need food. I need liquid. I need sustenance. I need appreciation for myself. I need to give myself what I need. And I don't have to deny anybody any of these things, because even though I am asking for them and getting help from other people, I'm learning what I need and asking for that. That's not the easiest thing in the world, but it is what I want you to know, that it comes in handy to be able to just say, you know, I kind of need this. Could you do this? Or, and then the word please is so important. And I know my time is getting short, so I want to kind of wind down a little bit. I don't pray a whole lot, and I only have one prayer. Thank you. Just thank you. It has been my constant prayer early on, because I've been given so, so much. I want to also mention my dogs have been a most incredible aspect of my recovery. The dog I have now is a dear, wonderful boy. The one I had just before for 12 years was my canine soulmate. And every time I heard something that was painful, particularly about my daughter's cancer and then mine, or when a bolt of lightning hit, and I had a cousin who died from COVID, as a matter of fact, he was right there. He had the ability to understand what was coming out of my head. I had actually had three other heart dogs. This one was the last one and the one that got me through these years. When I had to put him down, it just about broke me in pieces. And that was January 20th, 2020. But Gable, my current dog, and I have survived that loss well. And I see him taking his place. Also wanted to tell you about Cheeky. Cheeky was a little towhead who came and visited my house more than once a day. Not just looking in, but actually walking in the door to my garden, walking around my house, flying around, sitting on the dog's bowl, eating his food, looking at us, walking right up to the dogs when they were lying down, and just being Cheeky. And I named her, and she came in for 2 years. That was life walking into my house every day, more than once a day, even when it was raining. Who invites a towhead to come in and live with them? But she came, and she was there. And then one day, about a year ago, she was gone. But I did write about her. My garden is so much of a comfort. When I left my old home in Arinda and I was thinking about where I was going to move to, I was asked, what will you miss the most if you leave? And there were two things. One was spectacular views, and the other was my rose garden. And when I ended up with this house that I watched every inch being built, I got both of those. And I have what I think is a lovely garden. And I have beautiful views out of all my windows, pretty much all my windows, that give me comfort and remind me that I have a higher power who's right there next to me all the time. So the house being built on the Serenity Prayer, when the house was not yet under construction, I would drive out every night to the lot and watch the sunset, and I'd have my then two dogs in my car, and I'd watch the sunset, and I would wait for them to build the base, the foundation for the house, and it took forever. They finally put the rebar down. They put they leveled part of the foundation area. And every night I would drive out, and it wouldn't have been poured. The foundation just wasn't there. So one night when I came out, I had been in the program for about 9 months, I took my chips, and that's when we gave out chips for 90 days, 60 days, 30 days, and 1 day. And I took those chips, and I put one in front of where the front door was going to be. I tucked it under the rebar in the dirt. And I said each line of the Serenity Prayer as I put the chip in. So I said the first line, and then I put the second chip in the living room. And then I put the third chip in under the rebar in the family room. And then I put the fourth chip in under what would be my bedroom, where my bed would be, and it still is. And that to me was adding the Serenity Prayer to this house. When I came out the next night, and now mind you, this had been about 3 or 4 months of waiting. The foundation had been poured. So those chips are there permanently. And that is why I say my house is built on the Serenity Prayer. The last things I want to talk about is a little bit about on death and dying, and what do I want to take with me and leave. And I don't want to forget how important my family have been. And also, I've made peace with my ex-husband. When I ended up doing a ninth step with him, totally unscripted, unthought of, but so rewarding. Now, many years ago, have I ever gotten one from him? I don't need it. Would I like to? Yeah, maybe, but maybe not. But I will say that my children have been unbelievable. Somebody did a good job, and I did not do it alone. My higher power has helped every step of the way. Because even though they're not program members, they're getting it by osmosis. So what do I want to take with me? And what do I want to leave? I want to take your love. I want to take seeing you at meetings. I want to take nothing for granted. I want to take with me memories that we share. I want to take with me all of Al-Anon and everything it has given to me and it has given to you, and to continue to hope that together we are all able to be members of this worldwide program of love and acceptance, appreciation, and understanding. And thank you.